Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining the Relax Back UK show. This week, I chat with Dr. Rupi from Doctor's Kitchen.
The number of people who are eating ultra-processed foods, unbeknownst to them, was shocking. Cereals, because of the heart health label. Sandwiches, because it was whole grain. Healthier baked chips, because it didn't have as much oil in. These are all ultra-processed foods that are lacking in key nutrients.
The topic is our diet, what it might be lacking, specifically fibre, and then what to do about it. So please, do join me for a great show. Thank you. Dr. Rupi is a GP in the NHS and also refers to himself as a nutritionist. Now, being a GP and a nutritionist, I think, is a pretty rare combination. So my first question to him was, how did that come about?
So my nutrition journey really started when I became a junior doctor over 15 years ago. So I suffered a heart condition, something called atrial fibrillation, and that's what led me down the route of really looking at my diet and lifestyle before I entertained having a more aggressive procedure. And the more I learned about diet and nutrition, the more I realized how much of a role it features in so many people's health issues, whether we're talking about obesity like we are today, or type 2 diabetes, poor metabolic health, but also things like mental well-being, women's health, menopause. I mean, there's just nutrition intersects with every medical specialty that I've had the privilege of working in. And I trained as a general practitioner, and then I did A&E and ITU, came back from Australia, and I started The Doctor's Kitchen, which is a platform to educate people about the beauty of food and the medicinal effects of eating well. And I did a master's in nutrition at University of Surrey whilst I was working at the same time. So yeah, it was a...
That was going to be my next question, actually. Tell us your qualifications and are you registered as a nutritionist?
Yeah, so I've done a master's in nutrition. I've done my dissertation, all the rest of it. I'm not with the AFN, if that's what you're asking, but I think partly with my medical career and, you know, the analytical approach I've taken with everything, I feel confident about nutrition, and it's like my passion as well. It's what we talk about all day, every day here with the research team and the podcast as well.
It was actually what I was asking, not because I was trying to be kind of a smart ass, but it's just that, I'm kind of making a serious point here. A GP, a doctor, is a protected title. Like if you said you're a GP and you weren't, you'd be in serious trouble. Now, a nutritionist is not a protected title. So I could call myself a nutritionist this afternoon and charge people give them my advice. They'd be bonkers to take it. So if you are talking to a nutritionist, it's probably a good idea to check on a register somewhere to see if they are registered.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I agree. Same thing with dietitians. There's a whole bunch of different...
Well, dietitian is a protected title. Nutritionist is not.
Yeah. But in America, particularly, and because we live in a global society now where people can call themselves anything, I think it's really important to learn about some of the credentials and the way in which people describe themselves online and checking whether there are relevant bodies that can regulate that as well.
Yeah, good. All right, on with the topic in hand. Thank you for that. We are getting fatter. Kind of everybody knows that. But at the top of this news advisory, there's one particularly sort of alarming fat stat. What is the fat stat that is sort of the headline here?
Well, the headline is, you know, 71% of adults could be overweight by 2040. And the sharpest rise is, you know, the poorest communities. But already we do have a real issue with obesity and people being overweight. In fact, it's two-thirds of adults already are overweight or obese. And the messaging, particularly from the government, has been around restriction, you know, not having too much sugar, not having too many calories and not having as much fat. And all these are very important, obviously. These are still part of the messaging that we should all be aware of. But what I think is distinctly lacking is the contribution of whole foods, particularly nuts, seeds, legumes,
whole grains. I want to pick your brains on what we can do about it, but in a moment or two, because I just want to home in a bit on the messaging. Okay, so we've got at the top of this, poor diet is killing more people in the UK than smoking. All right, now that's quite a sweeping statement. Where does that come from? Because I've got a couple of questions about that. Where does that statement come from?
Well, if you look at the Global Burden of Disease studies, and these were published a number of years ago, we know that poor diet is the leading cause of disease and mortality and morbidity globally. We've known this for a long time now, but I don't think the attention is being given to it in the way that I would like to see, and I know other people would like to see in the nutrition industry. Right. Because even though we know that what we shouldn't be eating, the biggest issue is what we're not eating. And we're not, as I was going to say, and I'll make this point very quickly here so we can go into it a bit later, but nuts, seeds, whole grains, legumes, things that contribute fiber, which is hugely lacking in our diet. In fact, 96% of people, according to the latest nutrition and diet survey, do not consume the 30 grams of fiber per day, which is pretty shocking. It averages around 15 to 18 grams. There's a long way to go. And if that alone, if we were to plug that nutritional gap, could lead to thousands of lives being saved in the UK alone per year. And so this idea around diet being as harmful, or poor diet being as harmful as smoking, sounds really shocking and sensationalist, but it is true. It is true, so, unfortunately. Yeah,
I read that. That was the word that came into my mind, sensationalist. And I thought, hang on a moment, you know, actually, not so many people smoke, and that has a very high degree of risk with it. Everybody eats, and that has a low degree of risk from it. So the two aren't really comparable, you know, because you're talking doing a few people doing something that's really high risk, and everybody doing something that's kind of low risk. So it is a headline designed to make people worry and sit up. But I was just thinking, is it really fair?
It's a fair point. And I think the idea that we are doing something that is low risk, I think is possible for most people. But the issue is most people are eating a poor diet that is really, really risky. And we don't equate the two. And I take your point, you know, in the same way, I don't feel like we should be banning all foods, or the government should step in and say, you can't have your French fries and you can't have your biscuits. I'm not a believer of that. Whereas I do think they should be intervening with smoking, because we can reasonably say smoking has no benefits, whereas food is so much more than just nutrient value. It's culture, it's heritage, etc. Yeah. So I think it's, you're right. Like, when we equate the two, in a headline, it can feel a bit sensationalist, but I feel sometimes we need to utilize some of these marketing strategies to get the message
across. Nothing wrong with a bit of sensationalism occasionally, yeah.
we need to get the message across. And you know, one of the things that I really want listeners to get away from this is that there is so much power in our plates. And if we make better decisions on a day-to-day basis, like increasing nut, seed, dry fruit consumption, as well as whole grains and legumes and all the good stuff, then it can meaningfully change their risk of chronic illnesses that are crippling, you know, our health systems like the NHS.
Well, let's get onto that, because you must be living like in a cave somewhere and have no devices, no phone, no TV, don't read any newspapers, if you don't kind of know what a good diet is shortly, because, you know, what we need to do, we need to eat healthily, do a bit of exercise and sleep well. And I'm pretty much convinced everyone in the UK must know that. So the problem is not telling us what to do, potentially, it's because we don't do it. We ignore it. Is that the issue? Or you were hinting at something a little more than that, I think.
I would say I can see why people might have that understanding. And look, Mike, we both work in health and health communication. So for us, it seems really obvious. But I really do feel like we work in a bubble. So when I was working full time as an NHS GP, the number of people that I would see across from my desk who would tell me that they eat a healthy diet, completely, you know, honestly and earnestly. And when we actually dig in, and I used to ask five questions: what do you eat for breakfast, lunch, dinner? What do you snack on? What do you drink? Five questions, and I get a snapshot of what their diet is from the day before. It gives me a general idea of like what they're likely to be eating. The number of people who are eating ultra-processed foods, unbeknownst to them, was shocking. Cereals, because of the heart health label. Sandwiches, because it was whole grain. Healthier baked chips because it didn't have as much oil in. These are all ultra processed foods that are lacking in key nutrients. Whereas if they were to change just a couple of those things, and this is something I've got a lot of experience in, just giving these little health hacks, a handful of nuts and seeds as an example, just 25 grams, super cheap. This can improve the amount of fiber you're consuming, the amount of nutrients in the way of vitamin E and magnesium, both of which are quite lacking in people's diets. And we have evidence to demonstrate that this can meaningfully reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease and metabolic health, as demonstrated by multiple studies like the PREDIMED one, but also meta-analyses of these studies where they increase healthy fats in their diet. So it's simple things like that that I don't think people actually grasp, even if they are motivated to do so. And there is actually research where if people were told that nuts and seeds were part of the 5-a-day campaign, which is what, you know, what we're talking about at a much broader level today, this white paper that was delivered to Parliament by Whitworths, trying to get the government to include nuts, seeds and dried fruit as part of the 5-a-day. If people were aware or were told that nuts and seeds were part of the 5-a-day, 63% of them say that they would be more likely to add them if they were recognized as part of the 5-a-day. So there is a messaging component to this as well that I think we should be a lot more enthusiastic about.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I guess I do try and eat nuts and stuff like that. I certainly try and eat fiber, but I don't certainly have a handful of nuts every day. As far as the fiber thing, so you're kind of saying if we all eat a bit more fiber, we're less likely to be overweight. This is probably an unfair question, but I'll ask it anyway. What's the process? What makes that happen? Is it because we're just all pooing a bit more? Surely not.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, let's go through fiber 101 because we could do a whole yes. podcast on this. So fiber is like this incredible multi-tool, if you like. And fiber is not just one thing. Most people equate it with all bran or, you know, like a refined cereal. Fiber is multiple different things. It's a complex carbohydrate. When you consume it, you don't actually absorb it. It is not for you. It is purely for your microbes, the trillions of microbes that live in and around your body, largely concentrated in the colon. And what these microbes do is they break it down, they create metabolites that can improve the health of your gut cells, gives them energy, reduces inflammation, can lower cholesterol as well via very well-recognized pathways. This has a knock-on effect on your mood, has a knock-on effect on your cardiovascular risk profile, your ability to regulate sugar. It is pretty amazing what just fiber alone, or increasing fiber from whole foods, I want to point out, can do. And this is where, you know, we referred to the Global Burden of Disease study earlier. Eight out of the issues with the top 10 reasons were actually related to a lack of ingredients in our diet, which all happen to have lots of fiber in whole grains, legumes, nuts, seeds, and fruit. So it does sound, again, a bit sensational and a bit fantastical, but fiber alone, as long as it's coming from whole foods, can have a meaningful impact on your overall well-being. And just a handful of nuts and seeds, so 25 grams, has around 8 grams of fiber, depending on what nut or seed you're talking about. And so this is something that could literally plug that gap that we see in the latest statistics looking at fiber consumption in the UK.
Let's explore. You say fiber from whole foods. What does that mean, as opposed to fiber from whatever else?
Yeah. So, I mean, you might have seen lots of companies adding fiber to sodas and extra cereal in the way of like refined powders and all that kind of stuff. So when I say whole foods, I mean as minimally processed as possible, one that actually looks like the original food. Fruit is a fantastic example of that. Instead of eating a pear puree or a pear juice, you're having the pear.
So is the fiber different?
The fiber has been stripped out of a juice and it has been mulched in a smoothie. Yeah. But when you're consuming it as part of the whole food, you're getting that rich matrix of food that produces the effects that we're looking for in the gut. But it also comes packaged with things like polyphenols and other micronutrients as well that are otherwise refined out in the juice. So even though they are the same ingredient, the way in which you consume it and the way in which it's presented to you and your microbes has a massive difference. And that's something called the food matrix.
Okay. All right. You spoke a couple of things about cardiovascular disease. And in fact, in the press release, it talks about cardiovascular disease and also diabetes, type 2 diabetes. And it gives some amounts, some percentages, actually. And I think you mentioned one earlier, a 50% can reduce cardiovascular disease risk by as much as 50%.
So if you look at the meta-analyses of nuts and seeds consumption against things like cardiovascular disease and metabolic and other chronic illnesses, a small daily portion of nuts can reduce cardiovascular disease by up to 25% and meaningfully reduce things like cholesterol, improve metabolic health. There are other mechanisms at play as well. Inflammation is a really big one that I don't think gets as much press as it should do, because inflammation is sort of this background process that can drive chronic disease. And what's so special about nuts and seeds in general, and you can get obviously healthy fats from other sources like fish as well, but they contain monounsaturated fatty acids. They contain these short chain omega-3 fatty acids as well that you find in chia and walnuts. And those can lower inflammation. And if you lower all these things, you package all these things together from whole foods, but particularly nuts and seeds, this is how you get these pretty profound effects on cardiovascular risk. Yeah.
I was actually going to ask you about the presentation of the stats, actually, because 50% or 25% sounds massive. But what I kind of admit I like absolute figures, because if you're talking about 100,000 people and the chances of getting a heart attack, you know, you've got 4 people in those 100,000 people and it actually goes up to 6 people. You know, some people might be willing to take the risk, but 50% sounds like a lot. So what are the absolute figures?
Yeah, I mean, if you were to apply the global burden of disease data onto UK cardiovascular mortality statistics, we're looking at a figure of around 15 to 20,000 lives saved per year. So this is all like modeling, so that, you know, there isn't a peer-reviewed paper on the exact number of lives saved, but if you apply these sort of statistical models, this is the number that we're looking at. And at a public health level, it's significant. It's really, really important. And I think, you know, if someone is listening to this and thinking, you know, I'd like to try this, you can even have a conversation with your own practitioner, your own GP, someone who's probably checking your bloods, in particular your lipoprotein profiles, your cholesterol levels, and actually start including things yourself.
That is so relevant for me, actually. I just got a message from my GP because I had a blood test last week saying, give us a call.
Yes. That's the worst text that GP can.
Yes.
Yeah. When they're asking you to come in with all our waiting list. But, you know, just a handful, 25 grams of nuts or seeds, take your pick. It doesn't really matter which ones, can actually move your numbers in the positive direction. And this is why I'm so passionate about it being part of the 5-a-day campaign, because we're sat on this information and it should be shared with as many people as possible. And I think if you ask most people on the street about nuts and seeds, they probably think it's calorific and they should avoid them. Whereas actually they are nutrient powerhouses with all these different micronutrient benefits, but also the benefits to your digestive health, your microbes as well, that I don't think is as common knowledge.
No, okay. Let's get into some detail of how much we should be eating. I'm talking grams here, okay?
Yeah.
How many grams of fiber a day should we be eating?
A minimum should be 30 grams, a minimum. Okay. So the current guidelines are for 30 grams to aim for, but I think that should be rock bottom. We are evolved, and we have evolved, to consume upwards of 50 grams. And one of the best ways in which you can increase your fiber per day is via legumes. So pulses, things like chickpeas, black beans,
lentils,
white beans, cowpeas, like all the traditional heritage beans and peas that we have sort of lost favor for in the UK. Like we grow some incredible stuff in the UK. We should really be making a lot more sort of noise around those. Nuts and seeds obviously are like one of the fiber powerhouses as well. And again, just a handful a day can be really effective at moving the needle on those. But whole grains.
You're saying legumes, okay. Say if we have a serving of beans, some sort of beans, French beans.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're having dinner and you've got some beans on the side. Is that enough? Like half a cup of these things or?
A half can of beans, which is about 150 grams or so, can give you around half of your
a lot of beans.
Total fiber. It's a not, lot. It, well,
not many
I mean,
people will have that much, will they?
150 grams is like a very small bowl for exactly, and maybe not a lot of people are actually consuming that. But
I guess that's the problem.
yeah, and you know, it doesn't have to be in one sitting. It could be across two different meals. And you know, if you're having, let's say, like a light salad, it's summer right now, like adding a can of chickpeas and then topping it with some walnuts, you know, is a way of getting upwards of 15 grams of fiber in just one meal. So
right. And we're aiming for 30, so that
exactly
know.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm a big proponent of savory breakfasts for this reason. Instead of having a refined cereal or a sugary croissant or pastry in the morning, you know, treat it like another main meal. Treat it like an opportunity to feed your microbes what they actually want, to feed your body what it's craving. And it's these nutrients that we find in these powerful foods that we should all be consuming more of.
How much? What about a bowl of porridge? That feels like it should be very fibrous to me.
A bowl of porridge can be. The issue with oats is that on their own, they can be quite starchy. And for some people, that actually might lead to a bit of a sugar roller coaster. But oats, especially the whole rolled jumbo oats, are phenomenal. I tend to pair those again. I know we're talking about nuts and seeds quite a bit here, but I do tend to pair them with almonds, pumpkin seeds. I add some chia into the mix as well, because that way you are boosting up the protein level of that meal, which again is quite satiating. and again can improve weight, because we know through something called the protein leverage hypothesis, whereby when you consume enough protein at every meal, it improves your satiation signals. And you're less likely to overconsume or crave foods mid-meals. That way, you're less likely to overconsume energy over a 24-hour period. So getting a good amount of protein at every mealtime, again, is another important thing. And you can plug that gap with nuts and seeds too.
Okay. I love marmalade. When my wife allows me, I have marmalade. Now, if I have that for breakfast on some wholemeal toast, that's got to be a good start to the day. As far as fibre's concerned, that's more of a question than a statement.
I mean, one thing I would do to improve your marmalade start to the day is mix it up during the week, so you're not just having the same thing. So that way you get diversity. Second thing is, if you were to blend some chia seeds into that marmalade, so it shouldn't affect the flavour, but it does boost up your protein and fibre of that marmalade. If you're not going to give up your marmalade, and I don't want to, I'm not in the business of telling people.
Well, it is homemade marmalade.
If it's homemade, that's great. and the other thing is topping that as well. So you can top that to give a little bit of extra texture with something like sesame seeds or something like sunflower seeds, some of the cheaper seeds out there. You know, that way you're actually boosting the fiber and protein without having to change your marmalade. And, you know, Mike, I would never tell you to stop eating your marmalade.
What I was trying to get at actually was the bread, the wholemeal bread.
Oh, yeah. Fiber in that. There is definitely fiber in wholemeal bread, particularly ones that you've either made yourself or you've gone to a local baker or something like that, where there's love and energy that's been put into it. The issue with a lot of wholemeal breads that you buy in the supermarket is that they can be quite refined. They have many different preservatives and additives given to them. They haven't been allowed to ferment properly, which means that the nutrients are still locked into the grain themselves. So I'm a big proponent of making your own if you can, or buying it from a local baker who has actually put the time and effort into creating a quality product.
Okay. Here's another question, which is probably unfair. Again, another unfair question. If we take because you're saying that the kind of the five fruit and veg probably doesn't supply all the fiber we need. So if we are fairly confident we're getting our five fruit and veg a day, how sure are we?
So we're pretty sure. So on average, even with the five-a-day messaging that's been out since the 1980s, it, originated in America and came over to the UK, we average around three per day. But the range is from zero to four to five. And so there are some people who literally do not get any fruits and vegetables per day. And what we know is, if this was to be added to the five-a-day campaign, 63% of people would say they would actually put more nuts and seeds into the diet. So I think that again sort of speaks to why this is such an important white paper that's been presented to Parliament by Whitworths, as to and the reason as to why like it should be part of the five-a-day campaign, because fruits and vegetables are phenomenal. And if we can get people eating more than 5 a day, great. But one of the ways in which I think it falls down is because it feels quite unachievable for people. Whereas a handful of nuts and seeds, it's actually a very, I mean, you're about to start doing it yourself. It's actually a very easy habit to start.
Tell me about this process then. Whitworths have presented a white paper to government. So Whitworths, I mean, they're a company that make or sell nuts and seeds, I'm assuming.
Yeah, one of the largest.
What's the process of influencing? They're lobbying government somehow, and I guess you're helping them. What's the process, and how long until anything might change?
Well, this is a process that's been going on for a number of years, way before I got involved. Although there is a lot of alignment, because my third book that came out 5 years ago was all about why nuts, seeds, and dry fruit should be part of the
five-day campaign. Give us the name of the book. Plug your book.
3-2-1. It was called 3-2-1, but I'm not here to talk about the book. It's done well. The process involves.
I'm going to talk about mine. It's fine. Talk about your book.
The process involves a lot of different bodies. So the BNF were involved, the Association for Nutrition, and there've been a lot of other people who are providing commentary on this as well, because the evidence is stacking up. I mean, people can read the white paper for themselves and exactly who was involved on the Whitworth's website. But because the number of people involved and the evidence stacking up, it should be a no-brainer. And I think everyone is in the business, as particularly myself, of helping people make better health choices. And in the knowledge that the Global Burden of Disease study has shown us, look, it's not just about taking food away from people, the wrong foods away. It's about introducing the right foods. This is something that I think should be a policy that everyone can get behind.
Good. All right. This is interesting stuff. And I might even be tempted to try some more nuts and stuff. I'm not sure I'm going to put them on my marmalade in the morning, but who knows? Never
you
say never.
You should try it. You never know.
Well, you want to be careful. I might send you a jar of my marmalade.
I'd like that very much. I mean, we do recipes here at the Doctor's Kitchen every single month. So, you know, we're always experimenting with different preserves and ways of boosting people's fiber and protein. So, yeah, we're up for the challenge.
Okay. Look, Rupi, if people have been listening to this and thinking, all right, I would like to find out a little bit more, do a bit of my own personal sort of reading, can you suggest a good source that has good, simple, balanced information that people can look at?
I mean, I would go to, if you want to read the white paper in its entirety and find exactly who is involved and all the studies that have been quoted and researched and all the sort of process behind the stats we've been talking about today, just go to the Whitworth website and you can find out more. It's on their homepage. And I think if people want to know a little bit more about like how they can increase nuts and seeds into their diet, there's so many different recipes online as well. But just if there is one takeaway, a handful of nuts and seeds can do much more for your health than people actually realize. And it's like a multi-tool for your health. It can improve your cholesterol, it can improve inflammation, improve your blood sugar, improve your vascular health. And it's a very simple habit to do. So just think about that.
Yeah. That sounds like a perfect place to finish. So, Rupi, look, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. Very interesting.
Appreciate it, Mike.
And yeah, I enjoyed it.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you very much to my guest on this week's show. That was Dr. Rupi talking about our diets and in particular fibre. Thank you to you for listening. And please do remember to check out my book, Cut the Crap, Ask the Questions That Matter About Your Health. That is available on Amazon. And also, if you are suffering from back pain or you're worried about your posture, please do look at my website, relaxbackuk.com, for some information and a chance to try out the BackApp chair. It has helped a lot of people. Maybe it could help you. Have a healthy week. Until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.